Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are with Dr. Ricky Ott. Doctor, because she has a PhD, so she's qualified to talk about these things. And she's talking about the things in which she has the PhD. Imagine that. It is important to say...
Doesn't happen often.
Well, it's always worth being skeptical. So what is it, your PhD? You've already talked about that. What does exon say? Because, as I say, when I see the sign exon, it has Valdez after it. But, again, with the paying attention... Exon captured the attention, held the attention, and focused the attention of those of us who weren't in the middle of it. And much of what you say in Sound Truth and Corporate Myths is quite different from what I knew, heard, even if I had continued to pay attention, which most of us didn't.
It's true that the popular version of the Exxon Valdez story is owned by Exxon. That 11 million gallons spilled, that the recovery in Prince William Sound was rapid, things are back to normal, fishermen are paid off, and everything's pretty much fine. It's over, it's done with. And, of course, that is not the case at all.
And Exxon says it's not the case?
No, Exxon does not say it's not the case. Exxon is still staying the course that everything's recovered, that there's rapidly, they have science to prove it. Interestingly, I cover this in the book, I show why Exxon science is potentially flawed. I have a minor in statistical design for my doctorate, and so I was able to read this thicket and maze of statistics that Exxon did. Unbelievable. It's not clear-cut at all, and as you would maybe not expect when there's muddling going on. Let's just leave it at that. But at any rate, a lot of these statistical design were... It's like a radio when you're trying to tune into a station and get a signal, and the radio was never fine-tuned in Exxon's case, so there was always a lot of background noise, so you never could clearly see the signal from oil. And, I mean, it's well known that you can swing science one way or the other, and collectively, Exxon studies seem to all be in this category where there was a lot of inability to actually detect and really see the effects from oil. And I cover that in my book. I show how this was done. And in terms of people, Exxon is still maintaining that they did this worker safety program and they didn't have sick workers. Or the lawyers, I always love it. They always say, this definitely did not happen. Or if it did, then... It was because a lot of people were in crowded living conditions, and there was just a virus. Now, if there was just a virus, viruses have lifespans. It's like a bell-shaped curve. You get it. A lot of people get it. You get over it. And what I'm seeing from the cleanup workers is that a lot of people did not get over it. One worker that I interviewed said, you know, I thought I had the Valdez crud back in 1989. This was Exxon's medical doctor's term for this flu, cold-like, wheezing, headache, just this kind of mass of symptoms. And, you know, I didn't think I would have it for 12 years.
You did say that there was one official response from Exxon, and I want to make sure that we are airing the full story here.
That official response will be on, what is Monday's date?
Monday's the 31st of January of 2005, 1st of February, one of those.
There we go.
It's 1st of February, I think.
Okay, so next week there's going to be a front page article in The Guardian, which is, of course, it's printed media, and this will be the first printed media after this book has become available. And their response was that I am a flaky propagandist. And there aren't any sick workers, and if there are, they were sick because of this virus. And that's pretty much it.
There is a piece of this in that context that seems to be important, and that is they're required to keep records.
For 30 years, in some cases.
For 30 years, and those records were kept. Now, the quality of the records, obviously is of some concern. The quality of the information collecting and all the things that go with that, of course, is a concern. But the fact that they're unavailable is a bigger concern. And it would seem to me that for those of us out here who are interested in not polemics, but in the truth, it would be helpful to get all the data out. Transparency is becoming a subject near and dear to my heart.
Well, transparency meaning that you don't keep secrets.
And it seems to me that that data would help clear the air, so to speak, on this subject.
And this is happening, again, there's two parts to sort of this covenant of silence, which actually some of the media identified as going on in our personal injury lawsuits, our toxic torts for chemical injury. It's not just Exxon that's doing this, but there's a lot of sealing the records from the public because you have the corporations arguing to the judge that, oh, this could really damage our reputation, our ability. I mean, we generate so much money for the economy, and here's just a handful of people who are sick. So let's just seal these records, take care of this handful of people. When really, of course, there's much bigger public health implications for all of this. So on one point here, we have records that have been sealed in the toxic tort records that have very significant public value, I think. And I'd like to get those records unsealed. Another thing that happened is, yes, you're right, Exxon is any spiller in a hazardous waste cleanup operation is supposed to keep, is mandated, required to keep the records, the medical records, for 30 years. Because a lot of times with these hazardous chemicals, the symptoms don't manifest right away. Like think Agent Orange, you know, things got worse if the more time passed. And this actually could also happen with
nuclear radiation also falls into that category.
Exactly. So 30 years. You know, that's a generation, and we're halfway through that right now. OSHA, again, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, our federal oversight agency, was supposed to subpoena these records back in 1989 in order to write a health hazard evaluation of what happened out on the cleanup. OSHA never did. They cited lack of budget. So OSHA didn't do their homework. OSHA still can subpoena those records. Congress could subpoena those records. Those records are supposed to be available. Now, I've also been interviewing with a handful of interns, graduate school students, undergraduate students, the cleanup workers, we're up to about 300 right now, and I've told, or the interns have told these people to write Exxon and get your medical records. A lot of people have been told the medical records fell overboard. I mean, think about what was going on the cleanup. There's no hotels, there's no hospitals, so there were floating hospitals, there were floating hotels right in the thick of the spill and, you know, the vapors and everything. And this sort of reminded me instantly of the ballots in Florida that, you know, the alligators got them. And I'm thinking, oh, my Lord, what is going on?
This is the dog ate my homework.
Well, there's another piece of this that I found interesting. Many of these people are treated with drugs. Many of these drugs come from petrochemicals. This is a very big subject that touches a great chunk of the world's economy.
It's a huge subject. And what the environmental medicine doctors are finding is that, again, very low levels of chemicals in our environment, whether it's our workplace, our school, our home, our traffic, that are below levels currently thought to be safe, are actually causing public health effects. And this includes some of our pharmaceutical drugs. What the old saying was when I was getting my doctorate and taking toxicology along with the medical students was that dose makes the poison. In other words, if you gave a small child the same dose that you gave an adult, you might kill the child but not the adult. Now that's been modified to dose plus host makes the poison. And of course, that means that our individual bodies have the ability to break down these toxic chemicals in varying rates. And if you are a smoker or a drinker, maybe you've compromised some of your body's ability to break down chemicals, or maybe these chemicals are coming at you too fast, and you have an hour commute in rush hour traffic, and you're breathing these petrochemicals, and you know, you get a headache, you get to work, the headache eventually goes away, or you take drugs to mask it, and you're not really realizing that your body, your rain barrel, as the environmental medicine doctors call it, is slowly filling up with these poisons to the point where, you know, you might start manifesting these symptoms.
There is a reasonableness test, which is not always reliable, because sometimes what seems obvious turns out not to be, and what seems to be common sense isn't. However, the idea that you take a product, petroleum in this case, that is full of what everyone acknowledges are toxic chemicals and has acknowledged for a long time, is full of these things, and you put them out into the environment, and we know that it kills things. I mean, the evidence, I mean, we expect that. I mean, look at this, you know, what happens to a sea otter, and it's, you know, narcosis, boom, gone. Mm-hmm. To put that into the environment and then put people into that environment, it sort of beggars belief to think that there would not be I mean, just from a reasonableness standpoint, and I know I don't expect you to present the counter-argument to that, but it's sort of as if we've been suckered into having an argument that's the wrong argument, that really we ought to be stepping back and saying, wait a minute, A, the burden of proof should be somewhere else. I mean, if this is reasonable, then someone who argues that white is black, for example, should bear the burden of proof.
Okay, so let's go back to your earlier question about what are the PhDs doing? Why aren't they out there, you know, trying to bring these issues to the forefront?
We'll be back in just a moment with the Paula Gordon Show, welcoming Dr. Ricky Ott. Please be with us for a couple more minutes of riveting conversation.